From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The war of words between the Republican and Democratic presidential nominees took a turn towards foreign policy Monday. CCTV's Jessica Stone discusses Donald Trump's foreign policy speech and the response from the Clinton campaign.
He's proposing what he calls extreme vetting of visitors to the United States. He's also proposing a coordinated, multi-pronged effort to take down ISIL. That sounds awfully familiar. Of ISIL, Trump is proposing a military coalition, which includes Israel, Egypt, and even Russia, to fight ISIL. He also reversed his previous opposition to NATO, which he had called obsolete and extremely expensive. He now says he will work with them to defeat ISIL. He also called for cyber warfare and ideological warfare against them to cut off their financing and recruiting ability. Some of these proposals, by the way, are already underway by the Obama administration. Now, Trump also alluded to attacks here in the United States in both Orlando and San Bernardino, California, where shooters had pledged allegiance to ISIL. He used those incidents to justify a call for ideological screening procedures to admit people to the United States. He says until then, there should be a temporary ban on immigration from countries which he says have exported terrorism and where inadequate screening occur.
The time is overdue to develop a new screening test for the threats we face today. I call it extreme vetting. I call it extreme vetting. Our country has enough problems. We don't need more. And these are problems like we've never had before.
Last week, you may recall that Trump accused U.S. President Barack Obama and former Secretary of State, now his opponent in this race, Hillary Clinton, of being the, quote, co-founders of ISIL. Monday, he said it was their policies that he says led to the creation of ISIL. So another tweak or reversal to his rhetoric there. When Trump says he wants to work more closely with Russia or that he admires President Vladimir Putin, Clinton's campaign is trying to create doubt about why he has that stance. Trump's campaign manager actually previously did do some consulting for the pro-Russia party in the Ukraine during the 2014 elections. The New York Times is reporting that the campaign manager for Trump received more than $12 million, which he has denied. They're also using Vice President Biden to voice concerns over a Trump foreign policy. Take a listen.
This man is totally, thoroughly unqualified to be president of the United States of America.
Interestingly, Vice President Biden making those remarks ahead of a planned trip to reassure NATO's Baltic states that the alliance will defend them no matter who next leads the United States.
For more on that, we spoke with our regular commentator on the elections, Professor Anthony Montero. Professor Montero, thank you. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Glad to be with you, Don.
So, I was just listening to the interview that you did with Glenn Ford at blackagendareport.com, and I caught the part where you had been discussing the speech that Trump gave on the economy and Clinton's response to that and her economic model in general. And then since you recorded that with Glenn, there's been this speech on foreign policy that Trump did yesterday, Monday, and that Clinton's campaign and the media responded to. So let's start with the economy, the positions of the Democratic and Republican candidates on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I said to Glenn in that interview, these are political speeches being given in what a battleground state to win votes or win portions of the electorate and to consolidate their bases. So we cannot look at these speeches as any kind of detailed plans, although Clinton did lay out what she called a five-point program, but we cannot look at them as anything other than political speeches geared to winning votes at this crucial period. And I guess also we could say, because this is still August, to begin to shift the polls one or the other way. However, what I did try to point out to Glenn is that Trump continued a theme, which is, in our language, the export of capital, the quintessential essence of finance capital, is the problem. And his solution, which, by the way, won't work, is to seduce a big chunk of capital back into the country by lowering the tax rate that capital coming back into the United States would pay. Now, he assumes, and this is trickle-down economics in a way, that if you induce capital or give them incentives for reinvesting in the infrastructure and in manufacturing here in the country, they will do it. And that is not the case. It won't happen that way. And I said to Glenn that the only solution, or the beginning of a solution, let me put it that way, to the problem of the export of capital is a form of state capitalism and a social democratic reorganization of the economy and economic policy.
Okay, let me interrupt you there for a minute, because so you're using the term, you know, the terms of your trade, basically, when you say social democratic, and of course there's the version that's used out in the political world, you know, with advertising agencies and TV and everything, adding value to the already contaminated use of that. But could you explain what you mean by social democracy or social democratic model or change?
Yes, yes, sir. And again, it's a social democratic reorganization of the economy. Some people call it a New Deal type economy. Others would say, well, it's a 21st century New Deal. Now, I'm conflating those terms, and I'm also adding the term state capitalism. And that is, the state regulates and controls the major operations and mechanisms of a capitalist economy. A social democratic reorganization of the economy is not a socialist economy. It is a form of a, and this might sound like an oxymoron to some people, a type of planned capitalist or regulated capitalist economy. That is the only way you can solve the problem that Trump identified, and that is trade deals that encourage the export of capital. The export of capital is what is impoverishing the working class and the nation, and hollowing out the infrastructure, and leading in real terms to this ballooning debt and the overtaxing of working people and small businesses. He's absolutely right. But he does not have a solution, because probably it is not politically viable in this situation.
Yeah, you mentioned, by the way, what these pronouncements are tailored to from both camps, that being specifically discrete electoral groupings inside the swing states, that here's the new material, we're trying to go for just this little group and that little group and peel them away from the other side, and simultaneously, if possible, rally the base and in any event not alienate the base. So
that's right.
So that of course means that these are things that are thought to appeal to key parts of the electorate in some of the swing states that they're targeting.
That's right. That's right. As well as, and in the case of Trump, attempting to win back or at least hold on to whatever's left of his support among Republican elites, that is, economic and economic policy people from the Bush administration, going further back than that, to hold on to certain of the elites of the Republican Party. So it is contradictory, and it does not flow logically, I think, when he says one thing as the problem, and then he gives a solution, which is not adequate to resolving what he says is the problem.
Now, I can see the political problem in there, of course, with the two terms that you use alone. And I agree with your formulation of it. On the one hand, social democrat or social democratic solution to a problem, the term means in Europe, which the right, the Republicans that are looking to attack Trump from the right would say socialism. And state capitalism is the term that some on the left threw at the Soviet Union for its system, and China threw that term as well, as a matter of fact. So those are things, of course, that will not appeal to that Republican base whatsoever once the terms are, at least in colloquial fashion, applied to the term. Nevertheless, if you're stating the problem as being the need to repatriate the capital in the first instance, and then saying once it's here you have to apply it to the problem, which under the current situation would not happen. As Dr. Wolf pointed out to us last week, that you know, the money that's already in this country is sitting unproductively, and in fact those that own it are lending it out at a loss just to secure it with the assets that go with the loans in case there's a collapse of the system. So what is it, do you think, you know, using the levers of the state, Trump has been railing also against the banks, you know, Wall Street and the big banks, the financial sector. Do you think he has in mind some sort of a reorganization or even a nationalization of that that he just can't say as a Republican candidate?
Well, it's hard for me to say because you're dealing with the most sensitive and most strategic issues of this type of neoliberal economy, this globalized neoliberalism. In some ways, he's talking about undermining all of that and has been attacked by economists connected to Wall Street, like Paul Krugman and others on the Clinton side of this whole campaign. I don't know. I don't know. But I think it is incumbent upon us to state, yes, Trump has identified a problem and in many ways the problem, but then on the other side, he does not have answers that are adequate to the problem and the contradictions of this moment of economic stagnation and near recession conditions. He just doesn't have it. And that's why I am saying that Trump goes so far, but we on the left have to agree with one part and say, but if you want to solve this problem, you have to go to a social democracy, a kind of 21st century New Deal, or what we could call state capitalism. Now, as you point out, you get people on the left who say, well, state capitalism is a false socialism, a anti-socialism even. And I am arguing that state capitalism is a stage in the movement towards socialism. It is a way of marshaling the resources in a nation to achieve certain objectives. Now, in our case, state capitalism must mean the breakup of the large banks, the seizing of the resources of several of them, and using them in a planned and strategic way to do those things that Trump says he wants to do. The reindustrialization of the Rust Belt, the rebuilding of the infrastructure. And then, of course, this whole notion, which is Keynesian, of putting money in the pockets of working people. And that is the stimulus that you really need for sustained growth rather than this trickle down from the big banks and financial institutions, which, by the way, never trickled down after, you know, several trillion dollars of money being given to them by the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department.
And so that's a statement of, you know, basically looking at Trump's analysis and saying that, you know, he kind of gets it in terms of the critique, but has no program or offers no program and the program that should be offered. What did Clinton, what's her program?
Well, her program is less radical than Trump's, but it's not radical at all. I mean, it's diagnosis. Her thing is that we will reform a bad economy. We will work it on the edges. Now, she throws certain things, sweeteners at working people, $12 minimum wage. I am not for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but I will relook at it. Well, we all know she's for it, but she says we will reform an already a stagnant economy, and through the reforms that she is proposing, we could get out of this period of economic stagnation. But she does not identify the problem in the way that Trump does. She does not see the export of capital as a fundamental problem for the economy, and repatriating capital as part of resolving the issue of stagnant growth. But how could she? She is speaking and working on behalf of the very banks that are profiting off of this massive export of capital.
Let's move to the speech on foreign policy that we heard yesterday from Trump and the response that we heard from the Clinton campaign. What were your thoughts as you heard Trump lay out his perspective on foreign policy?
Well, I think, you know, the foreign policy speech functions the same way that the economic speech did. He identified the problem correctly, that the rise of ISIS and Al-Qaeda are the result of the policies of the Bush and Obama administrations. And he says, and he's absolutely right, that Saddam Hussein, although the United States officials don't like him, didn't like him, or at a period didn't like him, at one time they liked him, but Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi and their government were stabilizing forces in the Middle East. That the Iraq War was a great foreign policy disaster. The overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi was an equally disastrous move, and that the U.S.-backed and financed war in Syria will have a compounding impact to what the disasters of Iraq and Libya have been. And so on. He's absolutely right. But then he is wrong in going literally to the post-9/11 George W. Bush war against terrorism policy. So it seems to me that if he takes that logic, the logic of Bush, that he will end up with a policy similar to what happened in Iraq, Libya, and now Syria. He does not have his fighting terrorism policy is not the solution to the problem created by the destabilization of the Middle East, by intervention and nation building. So, again, it's a political speech, a balancing act, but in the end, it does not resolve the huge problems of foreign policy. Now, he's trying to get out from under the kind of Cold War, anti-Russia, McCarthyite attacks upon him and his, by the way, now his campaign manager, Manafort. Here's the thing. He says we defeated Nazism, we defeated communism as though they were the same. So now he's engaging in Cold War rhetoric. And we can defeat ISIS. What I would say is it's a crazy logic, but it's about the politics of this moment. I'm certain his advisors are trying to rein him in, not from just saying, off-the-cuff things, but to get some, quote, coherence in his foreign policy that addresses multiple constituencies, his working class constituents, as we saw at the Republican Party convention, when he mentioned no more intervention, no more nation building, no more regime change. He got this huge standing ovation,
right.
But then you get these Republican policy elites and others who want to continue some form of the nation building and intervention. At least they want to have that option. So again, he's going in two, I think, very contradictory directions.
And the response also from the media and from the Democrats, but particularly the response on his identification of the problem. Iraq was a disaster.
Yes.
Libya was
right.
A disaster. Syria is a disaster in the making.
Mm-hmm.
This policy of regime change is one of the root causes of this. They turn around and say, see, that's what Putin said at the UN. And see, that means he's Putin's puppet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or as Vice President Joe Biden said, he said, he would love, since he loves Saddam Hussein and Gaddafi, he would love Stalin. Which is a rank form of red baiting.
Wow. I don't think Stalin's been brought up since like 1952 in a presidential campaign.
Yeah, I don't think so. Right, absolutely. But it would take a guy like Joe Biden, who also has a problem with his mouth, to say such a thing. They're trying to bury Trump. And they're throwing everything but the kitchen sink at him. I don't know that he or his advisors have the strategy or the tactics to maneuver in this situation. I think the foreign policy speech was not the right one to address what they're throwing at him. He has to say out front and consistently and unambiguously that he is not pursuing the Bush administration's war against terrorism. That has to be made clear. He cannot use the language of the George W. Bush administration while at the same time saying he opposes that administration's policies. in Iraq and the Obama administration's policy in Libya and in Syria. You can't have it both ways. And I think for political reasons, they're trying to have it both ways. But his opponents, the Clintons and the others, will clearly exploit the contradiction.
In terms of a counter policy, what the Clinton campaign has been arguing sounds remarkably like a continuation of what's happened, only better.
Yes, absolutely. I you see, this election is a continuation of what we saw in the primaries. In the primaries, there were two insurgent movements that, as we see now, were anchored to the working class and the interests of working people, the poor, and the middle class, the lower middle class. That is continuing with the Trump campaign, with the specific characteristics and features of a general election. But the Stop Trump and in the Democratic Party, Stop Bernie movement have now become this unbelievable Stop Trump movement in the general election, where Trump was fighting against 16 other Republicans and their campaigns. Now he's fighting against the whole Democratic Party establishment, plus now a good part of the Republican Party establishment, and now coming out from the dark recesses of the State Department and the Pentagon and the CIA, representatives of the deep state, the regime, such as John Negroponte and others who are traditionally associated as policymakers in Republican administrations, they're now coming out and announcing their support for Hillary Clinton. So Hillary now has this unbelievable big tent, as Maureen Dowd in the New York Times said over the weekend. Hillary Clinton is now the Republican candidate for president. And all of the most important Republican elites are supporting her. The money bags of that have generally supported the Tea Party and the Republican Party are now supporting Clinton for president. And the traditional faithful and loyal supporters of the Democrats and those who got Hillary Clinton through the primaries against Bernie Sanders, that is, the African-American community, labor, Latinos, and such, are now being said, you have to get to the outer side of the big tent. Maybe you're not even in the tent at all, or maybe you're consigned to that part of the circus where you ride on the clown car, and then during the performance, you're the guys walking behind the elephant, shoveling the dung. You know what I'm saying? Because we have to make room in the big circus tent for our new allies,
the elephant,
the Republicans,
yeah, the
who
elephant.
Are disenchanted with Trump. Now, you know, in that scenario, what is known as the Black misleadership class and the labor misleadership class has to reconsider where they stand in this whole new configuration. And if they are happy with the new consignment, their new function as shovelers of donkey and elephant dung in the circus.
Professor Montero, thank you very much. Pleasure as always.
Thank you very much, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.